We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
In 2003, Nike signed 13-year-old Freddie Adu to a seven-figure contract. But Freddie didn't live up to the hype. He has turned down every single documentary project looking closely at the details of his career. Until now.
People are going to look at everything you did because of the hype surrounding your arrival and what they think you can be.
I'm Grant Wall, and this is American Prodigy, Freddie Adu, from Blue Wire Podcasts.
Welcome to In the Know, the Bourbon Street Shots Podcast. We're your hosts, Shamit Duup and Mason Ginsberg, and this is All Pelicans All the Time.
Welcome to another episode of In the Know, brought to you by Indeed and Bet Online. This week, we are joined by a special guest and fellow Blue Wire team member, Laz Jackson. Laz writes for Detroit Bad Boys. He's the editor, also hosts the Detroit Bad Boys podcast, as well as the Pistons versus Everybody podcast, which is on the Blue Wire network. So, Laz, how you doing, man? Thanks for joining.
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me here. Really appreciate it. Very curious to see what you guys think of your team. Your team's weird.
It is a very, very weird team, but you have a very weird team as well.
No, my team's just bad. That's not weird.
I don't know. I mean, you got some cool, intriguing pieces. You got Blake Griffin, you got Derrick Rose, you got a nice pick coming up, but we'll get into the meat of the basketball stuff. But so the fans know a little bit more about you. You're a Pistons fan, and you cover the Pistons. Are you from the Detroit area? What was your journey into following and covering the Pistons?
Okay, yeah, I'm from Michigan. I'm from Redford, I guess is probably the most accurate thing, which is just west of Detroit and just north of Dearborn, if you know where those places are. I've been a Pistons fan since I was like six. One of my like earliest sports memories is like Terry Mills missing a game-winning three against the Hawks, and I was just like super mad about it, and I don't know like why that's like stuck in there. It's one of those things is like I couldn't get it out if I wanted, But yeah, so being a Pistons fan for that long, I've experienced some like very high highs and some very low lows, right? Like, well, I was there, well, not like in the arena, but you know, we had the championship in 04, six straight Eastern Conference Finals during that time period. And then things haven't been as good since. We've had you know, some blips of playoff appearances, but no sustained success. And we have a coach in common that we're gonna talk about a little bit later in Stan Van Gundy, but we're starting to like fully get out of the Stan Van Gundy like era in Detroit finally. And so yeah, that's me though. I don't live in Michigan though. That's the tricky thing. I live in North Carolina now, and I was telling Mason, following the team is kind of what keeps me like close to home. And so like that's why I really like following the team.
Yeah, that's I was saying in response, like I can relate as someone who's been, I left for New Orleans and Austin in 2013 and then came to Chicago in 2015. So it's been a while since living in Louisiana. And then I know Schmidt moved more recently, but he's kind of fallen right back there for now, right?
Yeah, I've, you know, ever since COVID hit, I've had the freedom to work from where I want to, and where I want to be is New Orleans. That wasn't a really difficult choice for me, but it kind of sucks because I came to New Orleans during the early months of quarantine my intention was a couple weeks. I was like, all right, well, let's see what this is going to be like. I'm sure my job was going to want me back. And then it was weeks stretched to months. And, you know, now I've been here since March. So yeah, this has been the longest year ever. I'm sure we can all relate.
Yeah.
I wanted, you know, you mentioned Terry Mills. That is such a throwback name, ahead of his time, you know, a stretch four back in the day. Mason, I was wondering what the equivalent of, you know, Terry Mills missing a random shot against a team would be for the Hornet or Pelicans, but I'm struggling to come up. Maybe it's a James Posey type thing, but Terry Mills is better than James Posey was for the Pelicans or for the Hornets back in the day. So I'm not sure what the equivalent would be, but that's a throwback, man. I didn't expect to hear that name.
I don't have a good one. I mean, the one thing I remember from the very early, and obviously we, you know, the Hornets came to New Orleans in 2002, and the thing that sticks with me, it's not a specific play, but just like the what could have been with Jamal Mashburn and how quickly like his career ended so fast. He was so fun in New Orleans when the team first got there, and you know, and just like injuries cut his career short, and it was just too bad. I always wonder, you know what could have been with that team way back when.
Weird times. We're definitely going to talk a lot about the Pelicans, but continuing on the Pistons train, you mentioned, you know, you're just not getting out of the Stan Van Gundy era, which, you know, we have a lot of thoughts on that, because I think, you know, both of Mason and I will agree that Stan Van Gundy wasn't the best executive, to put it lightly, during the Pistons tenure. So where do you feel now the direction of the team is? Because as you mentioned, you have a weird team. You have a guy like Blake Griffin on a massive contract. You move out of Andre Drummond's deal, which honestly, it's probably a good idea, but I'm not sure the return was necessarily worth it, but it was probably a good idea to get out from under that. You know, you have tradable pieces like Luke Kennard and Derrick Rose, which again, I have no idea which direction you're going to take. Do you see the Pistons being a team that's just kind of ready to get back into the playoffs as soon as next season from a management standpoint, or do you think they're going to slow it down, sell off some of their more valuable pieces, gain more assets, and take a longer approach?
So the team hired Oklahoma City's Troy Weaver earlier this offseason. Don't ask me when. The offseason has been interminable, and so I don't remember exactly when. But the word he used during his introductory like press availability was a restoration. So we are in the process of restoring the Detroit Pistons. Don't call it a rebuild, because a rebuild implies like losing a bunch of games, and they would like to sell tickets. Not that anyone gets to sell tickets nowadays, but yeah, that is what's going on with the Pistons. They are in a restoration period. So what does that mean? That means probably that Derrick Rose is not going to be a Detroit Piston much longer. That means you are hoping for a Blake Griffin kind of renaissance. His season ended in like late December, early January. And so he should be absolutely back to full health by the time next season starts. And you're hoping that, you know, with load management and the excess time off, that he will be, he'll play well enough to be an attractive trade piece. Anytime he's been fully recovered from any injuries he's had, he's been a really effective player. He was an all NBA player as recently as, you know, 2 years ago. And so you hope to still be able to get some value out of that. And then once you get past those two guys, you kind of have a really incomplete young core, right? You've got the recent draft picks in Luke Kennard and Sekou Doumbouya and whoever the Pistons take in this year's draft. You've got some good second round picks that are filling out the roster in Sfi Mikhailiuk, Bruce Brown, and who am I? Oh God, I'm missing one guy. It's been such a long time.
Christian Wood?
Yeah, he's a free agent. I consider him a free agent pickup. But yeah, and you've got Christian Wood, who I think re-signing is a priority for this team. I've heard it's a priority for this team, but I do think the team has a walk away number, but I don't know exactly like how high that number is. And so you're looking at rebuilding around whatever you get for number seven, Luke Kennard, Sekou Doumbouya, and Christian Wood. And that's an interesting collection of pieces, shall we say.
Yeah. And so I think the one piece that's not really a piece, but it's a factor, is you've got cap space, and you're one of not that many teams in the league that has cap space this offseason. What do you have? I guess two questions around this. One is, what do you think the Pistons are going to do with that space? And then the other question is, what would you do with it? If you were calling the shots?
I honestly don't know what they're going to do with that cap space, and it worries me. We've heard them linked to higher profile 2020 free agents like Fred VanVleet. I hope they don't go in that direction.
Just triggered Schmidt a little bit on that one. That he's been clamoring for.
I love Fred.
In Detroit. Not because Fred isn't a good player, because he is, but because that immediately like puts you back into like trying to compete. Yeah, trying to compete for like the sixth seed. And you know, I no disrespect to Fred, but like that's just not the direction I'm interested in. I've also heard them linked. You hear them, I think because they're one of the few teams with cap space, you hear them linked to a lot of people that I don't know if the team has any interest in. I heard them linked to Jeremy Grant. They have Christian Wood and Blake Griffin. Like there's no space to play Jeremy Grant. Heard them linked to like Derek Jones Jr. Very similar situation. Derek Jones Jr., Christian Wood front court will be, and you run into things like that. What I hope the team manages to do with their cap space is you find interesting young players on restricted free agency deals and make poison pill offers. Maybe that includes Brandon Ingram. Probably doesn't. I don't see a world in which New Orleans doesn't match anything on Brandon Ingram, but there are other guys a little bit down the scale, like your DeAnthony Meltons, like your, what's his name? Oh, good. Yeah, like your DeAnthony Meltons. There are fewer, but there are still some onerous contracts on the books of NBA owners who are going to be crying poor. And so you look at extracting draft assets for renting out your cap space, thinking about like Harrison Barnes in Sacramento, or, you know, Eric Gordon in Houston, deals like that, where you just, you know, hold the contract and take whatever draft assets you can get. And there are some younger unrestricted free agents out there as well. Pistons really need bigs. Harry Giles III, got his team option declined by the Kings for some strange reason. And so he'd be an interesting big man, unrestricted free agent to be in. Nerlens Noel is an unrestricted free agent. He's got the OKC connection with Troy Weaver. you know, just other guys like that. So using your cap space to rent out for draft assets and then picking up, you know, good young players on the margins is what I would do with the space.
Basically what Memphis did this past year.
Oh yeah, totally. Yeah, and if you end up winning, you know, 40 odd games like Memphis did, like more, like sure, that's great.
Yeah, it's interesting because you guys being one of the few teams that does have cap space, every single agent is going to throw the Pistons name around and be like, yeah, you know, the Pistons are interested in my client and they have the money to do it, and kind of use you guys as leverage, whether or not you've even talked to that player or not. So I think, you know, that's probably where you're getting those reports of those Derrick Jones Juniors or even the Fred VanVleets. But, you know, beyond that, you kind of mentioned this young core that you had. Now, Svi's on a great contract. You guys just drafted Sekou. What is the pulse on Luke Kennard? You know, there was some trade rumors this past deadline. He almost got moved, maybe to Phoenix. I don't know what the actual destination was. He's a good player. He's very productive. He gets better every year. He also might have the knees of a 40-year-old. So what's going on with him? And, you know, do you see him as a Detroit Piston? And, you know, he's coming up on that restricted free agent market. Where do you feel like his contract's going to land? What's your comfort level there?
So I think it's really interesting that you haven't heard any extension discussions from either side. I think there is some frustration between Luke's agent and the front office. Basically, because Luke hasn't had the role that I think he would like to have on this team in order to get paid.
What role is that?
So he's come off the bench for the bulk of his time with the Pistons. He started the past season coming off the bench, formed a pretty electric, you know, bench duo with Derrick Rose, actually. And then once it took an injury to Reggie Jackson to elevate Luke past Bruce Brown in the starting lineup. And so you wonder if the coaching staff really prioritizes like what Luke offers to a team. He's made great strides as a like pick and roll playmaker and scorer, but his defense has gotten like worse every single year. He was actually like weirdly like semi-competent on that end under Stan Van Gundy his rookie year, and has been poor essentially ever since. Maybe that's a preview of what we're going to talk about with Stan. I think that a guy with Luke's skill set gets offered lots of money on the open market if lots of money is available. I know this is like if I was Luke's agent, you know, you point at like the Buddy Hield deal and be like, Luke can do that. Like Luke's as good as Buddy Hield, and Buddy Hield makes like $26 million. Like why don't
Buddy makes a lot of money?
Yeah, exactly. And then you come down from there. But at the same time, you know, I talked about, you know, a restoration of the Pistons. I don't know if a brand new GM who didn't draft Luke has no prior loyalty to him. I don't know if you want to come out of the gate, you know, investing, you know, $60, $70, $80 million in Luke Kennard as a way to start your restoration.
What and makes so, it complicated a little bit is you guys have Svi, who kind of plays not a dissimilar role, but you know, he's up and coming in that area. There's some overlap there. You guys had Langston Galloway, who was a great shooter. Again, doesn't play a dissimilar role. He is a free agent coming up. I don't know if you guys are going to retain him. You know, but it's not like you guys didn't have options. You don't have options to fall back on that aren't good.
Yeah. And, you know, there are a number of decent, you know, shooting guards at the top of this year's draft, or, you know, primary guards at the top of this year's draft, guys who would be playing alongside Luke Kennard, who would be taking the ball away from him. And so, you know, it's not, it wouldn't surprise me to see Luke traded. It wouldn't surprise me to see Luke, you know, sign a extension and kind of then get traded. It wouldn't surprise me to see him stay in Detroit. They do like him, and he's been like he is a good player, right? There's no rush, but the situation between Luke Kennard is like really, it's more interesting than I think a lot of people like around the league are aware of.
Got it. And so you started talking about the draft, and so let's go there for a little bit. It sounds like you're very interested in keeping that pick and taking a player there. Is that fair to say? Is that something, are you looking at potentially, are you looking at trade up, trade down options, or are you good with where the Pistons are right now?
I don't think the team is interested in trading up. They don't really have the asset base to trade up. And I don't know if there's anybody at the top of this year's draft that's like really worth trading up for in their mind. I think you could get, like, if you trade up to three, you could get a similar type of player at between 3 and 7. And so the cost of doing it isn't worth it. The fans have talked a lot about like finding a point guard. A point guard has been a big source of contention. It's been a big team need for a long time now. And so, you know, in this draft class that has a lot of point guard prospects in it, you think like, hey, we can finally get this situation taken care of this year in the draft. And I do think that there will be like good point guard prospects for them to take at 7. I'm really interested in Killian Hayes, a guy who played overseas this year in Germany, French kid, knows Sekou, which is a bonus and like a fun little marketing opportunity for the team. Really good off the ball score, off the dribble scorer and passer. Really good at directing an offense, effective team defender. But the skill development is a little bit delayed with his offhand. And he had some turnover problems kind of earlier in the year. But I think Killian Hayes offers kind of the most of what the Pistons are looking for and could use in a prospect going forward. You know, I've heard them linked to other prospects. You've heard them linked to Tyrese Halliburton. RJ Hampton has gotten a look. They worked out Kira Lewis, which was interesting. And that was one of the first like workouts we had heard about. Who else? And Patrick Williams. We've heard them linked to Patrick Williams on the high side for, I think, where he's projected to go. But yeah, Killian Hayes is the guy I look at for this team in the draft.
I love Killian Hayes and I love Patrick Williams. So I would be a huge fan of your team if you drafted either one of them. I think they're both going to be really good players. I have them pretty high up on my personal boards. I actually have Killian number one overall on my personal board. So if he falls to 7, I think that's a huge get for you guys. And as you mentioned, he fills a lot of needs. I think it satisfies both the get the best player available attribute, but as well as fills a very important need for a very long time. I think he'd be really good, especially if he has a big man, a dynamic big man like Blake Griffin to lean on during his early career to open up the game a little bit more for him. Cause Blake, you know, he can do it all. He can post up, he can pass, he can run the pick and roll. He can do it all. So I think that makes the game easier for him. And then obviously if you retain Christian Wood, that's another really good partner for him to be a floor general with. So I think that would be a spectacular fit. Although, again, I'd be very, very jealous if that's how the draft chips fell.
Yeah, I keep seeing Hayes mocked kind of in like the 8 to 10 range. And so I do think he'll be available. It's just a matter of if what he brings to the table the team prioritizes over what, you know, another draft pick could bring to the table. But I do agree with you that you know, Christian Wood and Killian Hayes would be a really effective pick and roll pairing. You think about, you know, Sekou Doumbouya was at his best this season in transition, and Killian likes to get out and run. I think that would be a nice French connection. And who else? Oh, and he was really good at getting shooters open looks in the pick and roll. And, you know, like you guys talked about, that's something that's a strength of Luke Kennard and Svi Mykhailiuks. And so, yeah, Killian, I think, is a great fit for this team.
So in the event that LaMelo Ball falls, you know, there's been...
Here we go.
Okay, well, I'm going to go multiple places with this one, Mason. Calm down, okay? Relax. We're going to keep it nice to start off with. So in the event that, LaMelo Ball falls, as you know, there have been kind of reports that he's not interviewing well and maybe he'll slide. Maybe he'll, you know, I think the Knicks are really hoping he falls to eight. But, you know, let's say both Killian and LaMelo are on the board. What are you leaning?
So this is funny because I wrote something. Yes, we're recording this Monday. So, and this came out on Sunday. So I'd actually talked to people inside the organization, and they were telling me that the team is not a big fan of LaMelo Ball. Like they wouldn't take him at seven.
Wow.
Yeah.
And wow. So, breaking news. You guys just heard this on.
Well, I mean, it's published on Detroit Bad Boys. So you can go to DetroitBadBoys.com, read my story. See that
breaking
for
news, DetroitBadBoys.com. Check it out. Read his story.
Wow. But yeah, I think if it were between those two guys, the team would choose Killian. And that's what I would do as well.
That's what you would do as well? That's okay. So that kind of deflates my next question is like, okay, well, after you draft LaMelo Ball, can I interest you in one Lonzo Ball to accompany him? And you said you wanted to sell tickets. Well, let me tell you, the Ball brothers, they have a big fan base.
So if I wanted Lonzo Ball, I could just take Tyrese Haliburton.
Wow. Touché.
Am I wrong?
I don't think you're wrong. Well, I would consider Tyrese Haliburton like a less athletic version of Lonzo, but one that is infinitely more aware of his role and strengths and weaknesses than Lonzo is. So yes, I don't think you're wrong there. I don't think you're wrong at all. But again, I wouldn't take Haliburton at seven. Personally, I don't think he has a star level upside. He's probably going to be a really good player, probably going to be a really good pro because he does so many things well. But for me in that top seven, top 10 range, I'm really looking for who's going to change my franchise. And I don't think Haliburton's that guy. Yeah. But Killian Hayes would be.
Philosophically, I agree with you. From a realistic perspective, everything we're hearing and seeing about the top of this year's draft is that the extended scouting period has just made teams more aware that like, oh God, this draft sucks. And so I think you'll see a lot of teams reaching for high floor players in this year's draft. The Pistons are no exception to that. They really like Tyrese Haliburton. They said it, you know, openly, not openly, but there have been lots of very nice things about Tyrese Haliburton said by beat writers who have inside sources. Haliburton himself, I think, said during his media, his like draft combine availability, that he would enjoy, you know, playing in Detroit, learning from Blake Griffin and Derrick Rose. I've heard from outside sources that, you know, Detroit is on his list of like places he'd like to go. And so I would understand it. I would also kind of question the upside. But, you know, keeping in mind that this draft has made people kind of more risk averse, I would understand it.
That's fascinating to me. Philosophically, I feel like if the draft sucks, then, you know, like if your guy that you're picking fails, he fails. But the reward, the return on hitting on like a high upside guy is just so much more than hitting on a guy that's, you know, a higher floor guy. Because, you know, if you feel like they're going to fail – I don't know. I have this whole thing where I don't think teams are actually good at figuring out who is a high floor guy or who is an high upside guy.
I remember your piece, your draft piece from the summer. Yeah.
Yeah. And so to me, I think that I would just double down on that philosophy. Be like, screw it. Let's go get the most high upside guy, which again, Killian Hayes over Lonzo Ball. LaMelo. I totally get that.
Yeah,
but
I think I think you're onto something if there's like an infinite time horizon. But like, ooh. You can look at this analytically, right? Because like, you can grab all 60 players who are drafted for the last 15 years, right? Like, if I'm a GM and I get, you know, three picks in a row wrong because I'm reaching for star upside, like I get fired, and so like I don't want that, and so I understand, right? The objectives are not the same.
Agree totally. And ownership comes into play so much more so.
Yeah, that's very true. That's all. That's always a factor we don't really know about either. You know, you don't know who the owner likes unless he like talks about it.
Right.
Yeah, that was. Yeah, I mean, I think that's a phenomenal point to bring up with this whole conversation around the, you know, if you can take the safe pick a few years and it seems like maybe on the surface you know what you're doing, but at the same time, if those guys don't end up on your team past that first contract or a whole myriad of other reasons why maybe the cost of retaining the player isn't worth the production is that really more valuable than even if you missed on a few straight picks that you were really shooting for the stars on? Yeah, I mean, that the time horizon piece is so interesting. It's a great point.
2020 has reshaped how we work, and it's almost over. Businesses across the globe are challenged to be their most efficient, which means every hire is critical. Indeed is here to help. Indeed is the number one job site in the world with more total visits than any other job site, according to ComScore. Indeed helps you find quality candidates quickly so you can focus on hiring the person you need to keep your business going. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need, you can pause your account at any time, and there are no long-term contracts. And now, Indeed's new way of matching you with candidates instantly delivers a short list of quality candidates whose resumes and Indeed match your job criteria that you can contact the moment you sponsor a job, making Indeed the only job site that can move as fast as you do. Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. Try Indeed out with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is their best offer available anywhere. Go right now to Indeed.com/BlueWire. Offer valid through December 31st. Terms and conditions apply.
The wait is finally over. Football's back. You might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on every possible chance to win the season. From games, spreads, and totals to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on the season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, division, and championship futures all day, every day. Head to BetOnline today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget to use promo code BLUEWIRE at betonline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. I wanted to jump now, kind of making the transition. It feels like the right way to do it is to talk Stan Van Gundy. And so before we get into
let's talk about who Stan Van Gundy drafted. God.
That's what I was trying to step away from the draft piece before we start talking about Stan, because that's not going to go very well. So give just for folks who are new to the Stan Van Gundy topic as head coach. I mean, obviously he's had various levels of success with his previous head coaching stints, winning pretty much wherever he went, but there's more to it than that. Really curious to get your thoughts on Stan Van Gundy, the coach, since he's not, him as the executive, as we know, kind of didn't go so hot, but what were your perspectives on him as a coach, both good and bad?
I love Stan as a coach. He was always inventive in a way that I think Stan the GM kind of forced him to be by handicapping him with a limited roster. He always always got his teams to defend. I believe the Pistons were always like in the top 12 defensively.
This feels like a Rock Divers and Doc Rivers conversation again. I can't help thinking that.
It kind of is. Yeah. But the team was always good defensively with like guys you would not expect make a good defensive team like out of, right? Like the team's best perimeter defender for the bulk of his tenure was Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. And yet they would be like a top 10 defense. And people would say like Andre Drummond's not a good defender. How is this happening? And it'd be kind of true.
KCP was like a max level player just because those teams made me think he was this phenomenal 3-and-D player. You know what I mean? Like that was he was getting contract conversations at the same time like the Otto Porter Jr. was and all that kind of stuff. And so it was like, yeah, this guy's gonna get paid.
Yeah, the infamous 5-year $80 million deal that didn't happen. Jeez. Yeah. What else can I tell you about Stan? Stan's a fun guy. I'm sure your media members have already kind of talked about like how much they're gonna enjoy interviewing Stan. I think there was like already a piece in The Athletic about that, which I thought was really humorous.
We went from Dell and Monty, who were just like who were great people, but not really, very quiet when it comes to the media. So I think, it's fun to have guys who are willing to talk, you know?
Yeah. Well, and you get him on Twitter too. He wasn't on Twitter when we got him. I think he got on Twitter like late in his Pistons tenure. So we didn't get like the full Stan experience. If he's like tweeting after losses and stuff, that would have been great, honestly. But yeah, that's basically the pillars of Stan Van Gundy, right? Like your team will defend. He'll do some smart stuff offensively, and he'll have you in a good place. I think it was a really good hire. I'm very curious to see what he does with some of the pieces on your rosters. Don't think Lonzo Ball is going to be on your team.
Definitely want to hear more about that.
Let's go there.
So Stan Van Gundy likes his point guards to be able to attack downhill and pick and roll and shoot off the dribble threes, and Lonzo Ball doesn't do either of those things. So he's also a bad free throw shooter, and that's also kind of a big no-no. Understand? So
preaching to the choir.
Yeah, if he is this like super connector piece that he's, maybe like Drew is your starting point guard and Lonzo's like playing the like KCP role, but that takes away a lot of what makes Lonzo special. And so I just think it's easier to just like package him someplace else. Maybe if like LaMelo's falling, like we're talking, trade Lonzo to the Knicks, LaMelo to the Knicks, everyone's happy. ESPN gets to do a trillion stories a day, and no one has to worry about it.
That's exactly why I asked the LaMelo piece, because we've been asking several teams, everyone that comes on, we get their thoughts. Literally, no one has been all that enthused about Lonzo, which I find weird because I felt like it would be more 50-50 split.
Be fair, the last memories of Lonzo are from his time in the bubble, and that was like the worst he's played in quite some time.
Yeah.
His numbers are super bad in the bubble.
Oh, tell me about it. So I want to steer it back to Stan just a little bit. Defense, being innovative, being creative. Is there a quintessential Stan Van Gundy moment that you remember? Whether it's something he did during a game or maybe during a press conference or an innovative play or something he did besides, build a fucking wall. Is there a quintessential Stan Van Gundy moment?
Oh, man, you took it. Yeah, it's build a fucking wall.
It is? Okay.
Come on, man.
Yeah.
I mean, like that is a great NBA moment. And what makes it greater is that he's talking to Boban about it. Is like just two of the NBA Twitter darlings like interacting in that way was great. What else was there? There's some fun stuff from Stan. You guys probably haven't seen this, but you should. There's an Andre Drummond impression of Stan Van Gundy that's hilarious.
There is. I knew there was a Dwight one, but there's a Drummond one.
Yeah, there's a Drummond one too. It was also pretty. It's exactly what you would expect it to be. Let's put it like that. There was.
What would you categorize the relationship between Stan Van Gundy and Drummond? Or more specifically, I guess zooming out a little, are there former players on the Pistons you feel like he has an affinity for that he could be that the Pelicans might look to acquire more aggressively than your run-of-the-mill free agent or trade target?
Right. Okay. No, this is actually a good question. So that was an open question we had when Stan got hired in Detroit, because some of his Orlando guys were still around at that time. Right, like I think Dwight Howard was a free agent during that time period. I know JJ Redick was a free agent during that time period. Jameer Nelson was probably available in that time frame, right? Like I think Hedo Turkoglu was probably shot by then, but other than that, and and Stan liked all those guys, right? He actually brought in like a 41-year-old Jameer Nelson for nothing at a trade deadline one time, and he was the worst point guard I've ever seen in my entire life.
From the Pelicans, wasn't it? Didn't Jameer arrive from the Pelicans?
It honestly might have been.
Yeah,
I remember that. I called that trade to the exact pieces. It was like some sort of end of the roster trade, and it was Jameer going to the Pistons. Yeah,
it was bad. But no, like Stan like didn't, you know, bring in JJ Redick on like a 5-year, $80 million deal because he like knew JJ from Orlando, right? Like he managed to cultivate his own pieces. And so I think if there are guys Stan Van Gundy, you know, knows and likes around the league, they won't necessarily be former Pistons, but they will be good fits for a Stan Van Gundy system. And so, you know, I don't think you have to worry about that, especially since he doesn't have control of player personnel this time around, right? We've kind of talked around that, but I think the pairing of David Griffin, architect of the 2016 LeBron Cavs championship team, and Stan Van Gundy, like actual good head coach, is a good one.
Yeah, they seem very much like similar people in the sense that they have this intense passion for the game, and they, you know, they see it a very specific way, and you know, but they're also open and innovative, and I think they have this kind of way of talking you into believing everything that they're saying, whether or not it all comes true or not is irrelevant. But I feel like they're very, very similar in how they approach the game, how they view it, and how they interact with, you know, media members and fans.
They're smart, charismatic dudes, right? And so when like a smart, charismatic dude tells you he has like a good idea, like you want to give it a shot. Absolutely.
Got it. So more on-court stuff, schematically speaking. I feel like Stan has always kind of adjusted to the teams he's had rather than trying to force them to be a specific thing. That being said, you know, he did have there were some sort of comparisons drawn between Dwight and Andre Drummond when the hiring first happened. How do you feel like he's going to approach the Pelicans roster? And there's been a lot of talk on like, oh, is he going to turn it into the 09 Magic? Is he going to turn it into the Pistons? Where I don't think he's going to turn into any of that. One, because like you said, he's not responsible for it. But two, you know, I feel like he changes where he's at. But I was wondering if you had any thoughts on how he's going to approach the Pelicans roster from a schematic standpoint.
I think you will definitely see like Zion and four shooters. What I don't know is like if you'll be playing like drop coverage. I know like Stan preferred to play drop coverage with Andre, and if I remember correctly, that's what they played with Dwight too. And Andre, it took Andre a long time to get comfortable playing drop, but once he did, he was quite good at it. You know, great deflection and obviously like an amazing rebounder. And so, you know, that was really effective and a good development point in Andre Drummond's favor under Stan Van Gundy that I think will continue on for you guys. We talked a little bit about the Lonzo Ball piece and about like what Stan like expects out of his point guards. And so I do think you'll see probably more, see Drew Holiday kind of stretched in that playmaking role a little bit further than perhaps he's been asked to in the past.
Well, I think Drew, yeah. So with Drew, he's basically had to be a point guard for a long time and be basically the lead ball handler or creator for a good period of the AD era. You know, obviously Tyreek played a significant role, but after Tyreek was shipped off, there was a couple of years where it was Drew and, you know, you're starting Solomon Hill and Etuan Moore next to him.
Yeah.
And he's the guy.
And like, even like this year, if it's like, you know, I'm just looking at the roster. You guys can tell me if I'm crazy. If it's like Drew and like JJ or Drew and like Josh Hart, right? Like, you know, Drew's going to be handling the ball in those situations. And so I do think you'll see that continue unless, you know, something changes with the roster. You guys sign a point guard for Drew to play alongside. Like that's what I see. I'd be interested to see what kind of use he makes of Nicolo Melli. He always he had cute sets to get like Ersan Ilyasova and Tobias Harris like open looks from like that stretch forward position. And I think if you're trying to surround Zion with shooting, I think he'll find fun ways to do that with Melli and JJ Redick. I wonder. Well, you guys can answer this for me. Like, what is Jackson Hayes like supposed to do on this team?
So it is interesting because, and so I think Jax had a guy as young as he is, he had a solid rookie year. He definitely had rookie woes. The team, he's not that strong on the glass at this point. Doesn't really help the team from a rebounding perspective, but I think we saw a lot of good things from him. But I think the issue you run into now with Stan is his affinity for, and you know, like Schmidt said, he's innovative. He's not going to stick to one type of set that he likes. Like, I mean, but we have seen Stan kind of go towards that four shooters in a big type strategy. And so if that's the case, you know, how much does that, is there a place for Jax to get regular rotation minutes and have his development continue? So I think there is. I think that still has to be a priority for this team, specifically next season, to see what they've got in Jax and the type of strides he can make. But yeah, I mean, figuring out the pairings beyond Jax plus Zion, I think it was a very prudent point to bring up Melly. I think Stan's going to love using him. And I think his value to the Pelicans just went up with Van Gundy in charge.
Yeah. And the other thing is, I think, you know, I'm not going to lie. I mean, like, Zion's fun to watch, but I can't pretend like I watched like 20 games of Zion Williamson last year. So
he barely played 20.
There you go. Yeah. But so what other people have told me is that he was a disappointment defensively. I expect that'll change under Stan Van Gundy. But again, I don't know the best way in which he'll be deployed. It seems kind of like his best role will actually end up being like terrifying weak side guy, where he can just use his like insane athleticism to kind of protect the rim despite being 6'6", and you know, and to be able to like close out on shooters from the weak side. And I remember everybody remembers the infamous block on DeAndre Hunter when he was at Duke. But I don't know if Zion like holds up as like a point of attack guy, right? Like, I don't know, again, like, I don't know if you're gonna be playing Zion in drop coverage, right? Like, I don't know if that's the way that Stan Van Gundy is going to play it. And so, yeah, like that makes me very curious about what you're going to do with the center who it does seem like you could play traditional drop coverage with. But yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think step number one with Zion is getting him to fucking move at all on defense. And so.
Is that a physical thing? Is that a mental thing?
I think it's just, I don't know. I think there's a lot of theories behind it. I think it's a combination of all the above, of him not being in the greatest shape, him coming off an injury, not wanting to really exert or test himself on that end, conserve a little bit more on offense, him jumping into the middle of a season without any 5-on-5 or anything like that, and really just not understanding NBA basketball, so just not really knowing what to do out there. And him being a rookie. So I think it's a combination of all those things. And a lot of those inexperienced things should improve, but there is a physical component that I think people are worried about, which we are optimistic is going to improve as well. But the learning aspect is where Stan comes in. And I'm interested, like you said, is to see where Stan is going to use him, how he's going to deploy him, because the Zion in Duke was an absolute terror. He could harass people on the ball. He could murder people from the weak side with blocks. You know, you could just have him roaming as a free safety, and he was very, very good. He knew what to do. It's a different story in the NBA, where the offensive talent's just a lot better. But I'm very, very interested to see if Zion is going to have a major defensive role, or is he going to be someone that's quote unquote hidden for his early part of his career?
Yeah. I mean, like, you guys know this, and it sounds like dumb to say, but like, Stan Van Gundy has never coached anyone quite like Zion before.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's difficult for me to tell you exactly, like, using the lessons of like I had of Stan Van Gundy, is difficult for me to tell you like what he's going to do with Zion. It's like, I don't know. We didn't have a Zion on our Pistons team. Like, that would have been nice, but it didn't happen.
So I am curious about, given what you do know about Stan and the types of players and skill sets that he maybe either A, values, or B, can get more out of than other coaches maybe. The Pelicans have a couple decisions to make on free agents. So I think this year is particularly interesting because you've got you've got very few teams with cap space, Pistons notwithstanding, and you've got a lot of players who maybe you're going to be more interested in taking, especially where players that have bird rights, teams have bird rights on them, taking 1 year deals, getting a nice payout when they wouldn't be getting one otherwise, and then figuring it out again next year. And so the two guys the Pelicans have to think about are Derek Favors and Etuan Moore. And I'm curious, conventional wisdom would say that of those two, maybe Favors is the more likely because the Pelicans have fewer bigs than they do guards right now on the roster. But the counterpoint to that is, hey, if Stan really thinks that we can go and play fewer big men on the floor at the same time and non-shooters, then maybe Derek Favors isn't as much of a priority. And so, I'm curious if you have a thought around that as far as those two guys specifically, if there's one that sticks out to you as more likely to mesh with a Stan Van Gundy team than the other.
I think I could definitely see Etuan Moore like finding a role on a Stan Van Gundy team, very similar to the role that Langston Galloway played on the Pistons for his time here.
If we could get Etuan Moore to have a green light the way that Galloway had it, man, if we could get just, I think it's a mental thing for Etuan almost, but if we could get that to happen, that would be great.
I think it's a physical thing rather than a mental thing. I think he just can't get his shot up quick enough. Langston has a very quick release. He's more athletic. He's quicker. I think if you close out hard on Etuan, that's it.
Yeah, hometown hero, Langston Galloway. Maybe that's a Pistons connection that ends up getting made for Stan Van Gundy and Langston. I know Langston has a lot of love for the New Orleans area I think he's from Baton Rouge, actually.
Yeah, he had a ton of fans here when he spent that half season.
Yeah, yeah, and so and there's a Stan Van Gundy connection there as well. Like, yeah, that'd probably be a good move. Derek Favors. It's more interesting, more traditional center, more traditional drop guy. Again, we've been talking about like defensive coverages, more defense, more traditional like rim runner type. I don't see you could really make like you could go either way on Derek Favors. I don't think if he's going to make what he made last season or close to it, I don't think you can make a case to keep him. But if he's willing to sign for less, like sure. While that would help you kind of establish a baseline of competence defensively that Stan would enjoy, that Stan would try and build, and kind of go from there. So between the two, I'd probably say Favors, but that's just because I think you can find other free agents who offer you what Etuan Moore does. Easier on the open market.
I agree with that. But since we're discussing kind of transactions now, I'm going to go ahead and ask you if you feel like there are any non-Zion and Ingram players on the Pelicans that the Pistons would be interested in trading for, and what kind of deal do you think would materialize?
So I know the team liked Nickeil Alexander-Walker going into that draft. He was on their board. He was definitely an option for them, but when Sekou fell, they were like, oh, okay, no, like Sekou's the guy. Like they didn't think they were going to get Sekou at 15. And so Alexander Walker was like one of the guys they thought they would get at 15. I don't know how highly valued Alexander Walker is like for this Pelicans team. When I'm just looking at the roster, right? Like he's an off guard or he's a wing. Like you've already got JJ, you got Lonzo, you got Josh Hart on the wing. You got Brandon Ingram.
They kind of played him at point guard. They trying to figure out if he can be that guy. That's what they played him at summer league, and he had a lot of success. And then they tried it in the regular season, and he refused to make a two-handed chest pass. He would try to, I don't know, bring out his bag and be like, okay, I'm Nickeil Alexander Walker. I made the NBA. Let's see what I can do. And it was not a lot.
It's not happening. So, I mean, I would trade you like a Nikhil Alexander Walker and some cap salary for like Tony Snell. It's like, hey, this is a very capable wing player who's going to come in and shoot 40% from three and, you know, not be terrible in a team defensive scheme and not really offer much else, but will bring up your floor.
Who says no to a Nikhil Alexander Walker for Luke Kennard trade straight up?
Probably Detroit, just because Luke's a more proven player. Okay. If you turn that to, what do you guys have? Do you guys have 11 or 12?
13.
If you turn that to Luke for 13, like now we're talking.
Interesting. Luke for 13 is interesting. I think the cost control really worries me. It would have to be, you know, if I trade for Luke and I have an extension ready that he's ready to sign and it's under like $60 million, you know, it's under $15 million a year.
Yeah.
I would do that.
Yeah. And I don't think the trade with Phoenix that we alluded to earlier that, you know, was in place or not like was in place, like was talked about, right? Like we got a Woj tweet about it, which, you know, we don't get a lot of Woj tweets about the Pistons. And that deal fell apart because of, well, we don't know exactly why that deal fell apart, but it seemed like that deal fell apart because of pick protections, right? Like Phoenix wanted to protect the pick prior to the world ending. They thought they'd be worse. And so, you know, if you're, so in my head of like, I already got a framework of like Luke Kennard for like a low tier, like lottery pick. Like that's a framework I can already like get behind.
Mason, do you have any thoughts on a trade like that?
Yeah, so I was actually before the Lonzo, we kind of came to terms on the Lonzo situation. I was wondering, I where I thought you might go, Schmidt, is
Would you swap Lonzo for Kennard straight up?
So I think so. Yeah.
What about you, Les?
Probably not. But like not in like no Lonzo sucks kind of way. More like in a like, I don't know what Lonzo, it's like I know what I have in Luke Kennard. I don't really know what I have in like a Lonzo Ball.
And you got a year to figure it out.
Yeah. That's very true, right? And that year's not nothing. But Lonzo's money is also pretty, it's not insignificant. He right, no. Number two pick.
Yeah, I think rookie. It's around 8 or 9 mil.
Yeah, that's not maybe nothing. 10. We got the cap space to burn.
Right.
But yeah.
What's but like on a bad contract. You have a bad contract besides Blake?
Lonzo, yeah, you know, you're talking about like Lonzo and 13 for Luke, who I think makes like in the neighborhood of like 6 or 7 this year. For like Luke and who's on our roster? Like, yeah, like Luke and Tony Snell, and you throw in Josh Hart.
So that something. Was. Oh wow, that's wow. A no. That's a hard no.
Oh yeah, I think if the Pelicans are including 13 Lonzo wait, and Hart,
does Josh Hart have value? Or
is, oh yeah,
okay.
Yeah, I think they're aiming for like big fish. If like. I think they're aiming for quasi all-star / all-star level player with that kind of package. And, you know, obviously adding picks is necessary, but that's kind of the baseline that they would go for that. Yeah. I think they value, like, I don't think they would trade Hart for Kennard straight up.
Really?
I wouldn't.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. I also probably would not.
I gotta look at Josh Hart's numbers to figure out like what he's up to that makes him. So
Hart, I think one, He came off the bench, so his like raw numbers are depleted, but he's a phenomenal rebounder. He's a multi-position defender. Really good in transition offensively, which is how like the Pelicans like to play. But more importantly, I think he was just this do-it-all hustle guy that no one on the team could fill the role that he played. Mm-hmm. They defended 1 through 4 with him and on any given night. And he would always be putting his body on the floor, diving for loose balls, you know, drawing charges, crashing the glass. I think his rebounding is probably his best skill overall, outside of like finishing in transition, which is he's sneaking good at. He's like mini LeBron in transition. It's so weird.
That's a mistake on my part. Then that's a misevaluation of Josh Hart on my part.
No, I mean, I think it's, you know, like the Pelicans weren't very good, and so like why spend, you know, that much time evaluating bench players on the Pelicans? I wouldn't say it's your fault, but I think Hart has a lot more value to the Pelicans than perhaps people are aware of.
Okay. No, I wanted to apologize. Because like it annoys me when other people do that about my team on podcasts. And so I don't want to be the guy who's like, oh man, like I, like, what did your guys do? But like, I, sometimes you just legitimately don't know, but that is useful contextual information. I don't want to, if we're trying to work out some like equitable fake trades, it like helps to know that like, no, this team like actually like legitimately values Josh Hart.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's, you know, it's a non-zero chance they get a deal done with him this offseason on an extension. I was gonna say we were touching around the edges of what I thought we're gonna end up talking about with a trade option, which was Lonzo and 13 for Snell and Pistons got 7, right?
Yeah.
So that's, I thought we were gonna get there at some point. But it sounds like you're saying no to that one for the Pistons, right?
Yeah, I'd want to. If the Pistons trade down, I would probably do the rumored Boston trade, right? Like 14, 26, and 30. Maybe you spin off 30 into some more second rounders. They don't have a lot of second rounders in the future, so you could kind of fix that. But yeah, I'm trying to get, well, again, we're in a restoration. We're trying to rebuild this team. I'm trying to get firsts, not give them away.
Makes sense.
That makes total sense. Well, I think that was a productive and educational discussion from both sides on kind of where both teams stand in terms of where they value the players. But to approach the conclusion of our podcast, we're going to ask you a couple of questions about your Pistons fandom, and sure, hopefully you're ready for it. So this is an easy one. We ask people all the time, all-time favorite Pistons player. I guess let's change it up a little bit. Top three all-time favorite Pistons players.
Okay. So I guess the top three favorite's so tough, man. Top three, like, so it's on, like, Andre Drummond's on that list, as polarizing as he was, as frustrating as he was to watch quite often. He was like undoubtedly one of the most fun Pistons I've had the pleasure of watching. Sheed was hilarious. Sheed was great. She was clutch. She locked in the 2004 championship. She's on that list. And
look, you don't have to say it, Darko.
No, I was debating. So I've got two point guards in mind, right? Like, Chauncey is the easy one because Chauncey was like the steady hand that stirred the drink that made everything possible. But on the other hand, there was like a solid like 2 years where like Brandon Jennings was really fun to watch. And that's obviously like more recent in my memory than the
did you guys give up Chris part. Middleton for Jennings?
Yeah.
Damn, coming no, in hot then.
It was that, okay.
Was that
no.
Stam and Gundy?
No, that was it? Dumars.
Dumars.
Do you want to know why I know that was Dumars?
Why?
Because, so first things first, immediately, like, I wasn't like really paying attention to the Pistons at this point, but like even I knew immediately that like putting Chris Middleton in that deal was a mistake. Middleton like barely played that year, but like when he did, he was really, you could tell he was gonna be good, and they just like threw him in there for no reason. And the other reason I remembered it was Dumars was because like there were rumors like swirling that the team would like swap Brandon's because it was Brandon Knight for Brandon Jennings. And Brandon, this is Milwaukee. So who was the GM in Milwaukee at the time? I think it was Borscht? The guy in Orlando.
No.
There's a guy in Orlando, right?
Hannigan?
Hammond. And Joe said, like, yeah, me and John Hammond, like, we're just like, you know, on the phone talking about our dogs. And it's like such a blatant and obvious lie. It's just like how stupid do you think a fan base like is that you would say that like on the record? And so and then like 2 days later, like the trade was done. And so it's like, Joe, like, why do you got the, I was like, how dare you have the all damn audacity to lie to my face like that? Come on, Joe. But yeah, that wasn't Stan. That was Joe Dumars. And putting Chris Middleton in that deal was a mistake. But Brandon Jennings was super fun to watch as a Piston. There was a couple games in Boston where he didn't like Isaiah Thomas. And so he would torch Isaiah Thomas. That was fun. There was a 2020 game against Orlando that I will remember for the rest of my life, honestly, because it was just like the apex version of like you saw why like Brandon Jennings got drafted like seventh. He was just like, he was everywhere in transition. He was taking guys off the dribble. He was making these like hardness, like off the dribble, like lefty step back threes before it was cool. Right. This is like 2014 or 15. Right. And he's just like killing guys like that. He's throwing transition lobs off the backboard to Andre Drummond. And just like my mind's like exploding. I'm like, oh my God, this guy's going to be amazing. And the sad, tragic thing is, I think he tore his Achilles and like functionally ended his NBA career the game after that 2020 game. And so I always kind of think of it as like he flew too close to the sun of like what his talent was supposed to be. He was struck down for it. So yeah, long story short, Andre Drummond, Rasheed Wallace, and like the fun 2 years of Brandon Jennings.
Well, let's flip it around. Least favorite and like let's
Josh
say like
Smith. A, Josh Smith.
I knew
Josh
Smith. I knew Josh that. Smith. Josh I knew
Smith.
It.
Josh Smith.
Oh man, that was just so obvious.
You guys don't understand how soul sucking that was to watch. Like, not only did he play poorly, he seemed like mentally incapable of envisioning that like him playing poorly was like the result of like doing things wrong, and so he just like. He like literally just kept going out there and doing the same things over and over again, and it didn't work. And he would be mad that they weren't working. It's like, do you want to try something different? Do you want to do anything besides like belch up 18 footers and like whine to the refs? And the answer was no, he didn't. And it was insane. And then the infamous like Josh Smith, Greg Monroe, Andre Drummond front court, which was like.
Why?
It just drove me insane.
Like, did you have a celebration when his stretched contract finally came off the books this past season?
Yes. We raised the photoshopped banner, definitely. No, actually, funnier story is I know exactly what I was doing when Josh Smith was waived and stretched, because we were in Michigan, so I know it was so, and we lived in North Carolina at the time. And so I know like it was like December-ish. It was around Christmas. We were in Michigan. We were meeting the lady who was going to officiate our wedding. And my friend who never calls me for anything ever calls me during this meeting. And I'm like, and my wife is like, don't take that call. Like, what are you doing? And like, no, like, baby, like this guy never calls me. Like, I need to know like what's happening, right? He's like, okay, they're like, sure, like go. And the lady was like, and the officiant lady was super nice about it. She was like, yeah, sure, take the call. So I'm like in a Panera off the side of the freeway, talking to my friend. And he's like, yo, Josh Smith got cut. Yeah. And I'm like, what? And he's like, Josh Smith got cut. And he hangs up.
Did you tell your wife? What was the interaction after that?
I came in, I did some like jumping jacks in the parking lot and like came back in like with a stupid like grin on my face, and everybody's like, clearly like why did you have to leave? Like, what was so important? Is everyone okay? Is your mom fine? And it's like, yeah, it's a basketball thing. Don't worry about it. Let's finish up this meeting.
Wow, that's a great story.
So I remember exactly where I was when I learned that Josh Smith got cut. Josh Smith is 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 on that list. It's like, great. there's no other Piston who came even close to the frustration of watching Josh Smith, and I had to watch like Austin Day for 3 years.
Amazing,
man. I think we gotta wrap on that.
We're not gonna be topping this. So now everyone knows where Laz was when Josh Smith was.
Laz, let everyone know where they can find your stuff before we.
No, absolutely. Thanks again for having me on, guys. It's a good conversation. Really appreciate it. I'm gonna have to Google some like down to buck Josh Hart highlights now. A Pelicans fans, you can find me on Twitter at Laz Chance. That's at LazChance. You can listen to the Detroit Bad Boys podcast and Pistons versus Everybody on wherever platform you're listening to this podcast on. And you can read my work at DetroitBadBoys.com.
Awesome. Well, thanks again for joining. This was great. Glad we could get this done fairly quickly after the Damon message.